I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Daria.
Talking to me?
Hello and welcome to Arya Talking to Me, a Game of Thrones and House of the Dragon podcast. My name's Ben Vanel. I am joined by my co-host, Adam Knox. Knox, we just watched the finale.
We sure did. It's time to recap my favorite show, Torture Birth. Back for another week.
Yeah. It's like a bi-weekly show at this point.
It's great to have every different graphic variation on what could possibly go wrong with the greatest curse a cruel god has ever inflicted on the human species.
Yeah.
Childbirth. Pregnancy.
It fucked up. I did say the finale. The finale of season one of House of the Dragon, just in case you didn't read the title of the episode. And this is being played to you, maybe while you're in labor.
So, I certainly fucking hope not.
That might feel a bit tactless on our part. But yes, we just watched the season finale. Before we dive into it, though, I do want to address the emails we got between last week and this week from James, Patrick, Lydia, Anna, Webby, Joshua, Hugh and Harold.
Right. What did we miss?
I feel like we did speculate about this, but they all were like, yeah, when they mentioned the beast beneath the boards, it's clearly about the dragon bursting out of the dragon pit, which I thought
flew in through the roof.
Oh, well, one person specifically was like, Adam said it flew in through the roof. No, it came out of the ground. I knew it came out of the ground. It exploded out of the ground.
Nah, it exploded down through the roof. I don't know if I've ever mentioned this on the podcast before, but I do watch all of my TV shows hanging from my ceiling like a vampire bat.
That's right. Yeah, you have like the Batman sort of setup where you sleep that way, you watch stuff that way. You say that the blood going to your brain makes you smarter, and I believe you.
Absolutely. I'm doing it right now. And let me tell you, my head is throbbing and I'm ready to podcast.
And there was another thing. Oh, a lot of people clarified, and I guess this is maybe more clear to you if you've read just Game of Thrones books in general, but the reason that Rhaenys didn't burn everyone, and I guess it was clarified, you know, in this finale as well, is that A, it would have been like a capital crime. Like she would have just, it doesn't matter who won the war or whatever. Like if she did that, killed, you know, royals, her family, that she just gets executed. And also, yeah, as we saw in the finale, she didn't want to start the war, basically. The war had not started, so she didn't want to be the one to do that.
It makes more sense as well when, A, that was her escaping with the dragon. Because I truly believed until 30 seconds ago that she'd walked off, gotten the dragon, done a U-turn, come back, smashed through the ceiling of the place, and then run away.
But yeah, because the dragon pit, which I didn't know until A, some of the explanations, and B, yeah, the fact that it comes up in the finale, the dragon pit is underneath the big hall where they did the coronation.
Which was, yeah, like some weird other hole, some pit hole thing that wasn't like the Sept of Baelor or all the places where they go to where they normally do this stuff.
Yeah.
The other thing that was clarified with that as well is, yeah, her humming and hawing about who she was even going to swear to and who would be best for her and Corlys to chuck their coins in with.
Yeah, which I think we assumed and it was, sort of borne out to be correct, but there was a bit of discussion, obviously, Corlys. Well, we all thought, all of us All you and me thought that Corliss was dead, pretty much. Turns out he just needed a walking stick. So that did change things, and I guess they had to have that chat where it feels like she convinced him of like, come on, you know what you're supposed to do here. So we got some other emails. We got another two. We got one from Anthony here, who had a different understanding of what the White Worm was trying to convey in that conversation she had with Otto, where she was talking about the greater will of the people when it comes to the power of the Iron Throne and the One Seated. Anthony reckons it was like some kind of like a Chekhov's gun for like a citizen's revolt.
Okay.
I think like us, he sees this first season as just the first act, and you know, you'd lay seeds, you plant seeds for things like that early on. And I think, yeah, he interpreted it as like the White Worm being more like, just don't forget, you know, where the power actually is. Which I don't know, I do, because she has certainly been, you know, sneaking around and pulling strings. And I guess we didn't really know why, like the motivation. Like we know, you know, what effect, but she just seemed to be having fun, you know, doing a bit of subterfuge.
Until that episode, yeah, until she came out and was like, hey, here's what I actually want. It's hella reasonable.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't think we talked about that, of like it being maybe symbolic or representative of like a greater, you know, the people.
Sure, maybe. I guess I wouldn't have, taken it to be a symbol of the people. But there are like a few things in this where they're showing a lot more than Game of Thrones did, like the average, everyday, you know, Joe Grosscloth. Sitting around, being shuffled into this stupid fucking pit dungeon hole place to be stomped on by a dragon coming from above. And they've shown like they've shown a lot more of the like people on the ground, looking at best disinterested in what's going on with the royals.
Yeah. And at worst, like being a child being thrown into a ring and having to fight another child. So, like,
yeah,
you can see there is the, like, potential fermentation of revolution. But, I don't know. We'll see. And then there was an email here from Sydney saying, big fan of the show, big fan of all the pods. Thank you. Thank you, Sydney. About House of the Dragon, something that Sydney found really fascinating is the way the show is contrasting Rhaenyra and Alicent. Specifically, there are all these accusations of Rhaenyra being a whore, despite the fact that she and Laenor were in a loving and consenting open marriage. Good modern read on that. Mm-hmm. As far as we ever see, Rhaenyra is only involved with men due to a genuine attraction and does so with Laenor's consent. Even when she marries Daemon, she sends Laenor away to live the life he wants instead of killing him. It's all pretty reasonable. In contrast, Alicent is held up by the kingdom as a paragon of purity and virtue, yet behind the scenes we see that she is the one exchanging her body in different ways for power, influence, etc. Her marriage to Viserys, which is just about power for Otto, also with Larys and the creepy foot scene, which is obvious, which is the most obvious example. Even with Kristen Cole, she is acting within the role of courtly love, which is historically a desirable woman utilizing her sensuality in a way that is technically appropriate, but I think by modern standards would be considered like emotional infidelity in exchange for loyalty, which I also see. There is that weird connection between them that she's made a purposeful effort to, I guess, cultivate. Basically, Sydney says, it's all hypocritical and the public perception of each of them is in direct opposition to what's actually going on behind closed doors. That's from Sydney and her partner, husband, Brendan.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's the same as you ever get, where Alicent is the one with the least autonomy out of the two. She is the most controlled by others. And is also the most outwardly conscious of how she appears to others and is deliberately aware of that. I was going to say manipulative, but not, just more sees it as the tool that it is for someone in her position. But also, is the most controlled. But she, like, even in the last episode, the only reason she kicks off and starts making decisions is because she essentially gets told to. by a man in her perception. And then, Rhaenyra is the opposite, where she's basically had her own thing and has made her own decisions for her entire life. And people don't like that in a woman.
No. People. No, they do not.
Joe Grosscloth, he ain't into that.
No. He's easily manipulated. And then we got a couple of emails just after the episode aired. One from Nick, who loved the episode, said it was a terrific way to finish the season. And he said it was always going to be Aemond who drew first blood. Being bullied as a child, he has a major chip on his shoulder. But he also knew that he fucked up. And it was interesting, he says, to show viewers that, yes, they have dragons, but they aren't fully under the control of the riders. They are still a beast.
Yeah, we'll get to that bit later in the episode, but I think similar thoughts.
Yeah. And then, as you mentioned, the opening of the episode, the stuff with the birthing scene, was fucked up. And Josh, that's also his immediate response, he says, of all the things I've seen and been desensitized to through shows like Game of Thrones and now House of the Dragons, I don't know that I've ever seen a moment in TV or movies that I actively do not want to watch ever again, like the first 10 to 15 minutes of that episode. Truly heartbreaking and rough to watch. Agreed.
Dude, I have one chance to eat today, and I took it at the start of this episode. I had a little thing of sushi that I got delivered, and let me tell you, fucking half that sushi ain't going nowhere near a mouth for the rest of its, well, until it gets to like a rat's mouth one day in a dump somewhere, but
it really put me off my stillborn baby that I was having for lunch. Yes, let's get into it. What is the finale called?
The Black Queen.
Black Queen, yeah.
I must have missed, because everyone I saw him reacting to the last week's episode too was already talking about Team Black and Team Green. I don't know when I get the green, but I don't know when the other half was assigned black.
No, me neither. Like, literally, there's that one episode where they go, the green is the color of when the Hightowers go to war. And we were like, oh, yeah, that's why our dress is green. And since then, everyone's been like Team Green and apparently Team Black. So
it's got to be people from who've, you know, read the book, knowing about black and green, wherever they came from, and that seeping into general thing. But
yeah.
This is, last week we saw the green side, I suppose. We saw Alicent and everything and didn't catch up with Rhaenyra. And now we're doing the flip of that. It's all Rhaenyra all the time, baby, as I would swear to.
I think I preferred this of the two episodes. Both of them had, you know, big climactic events with big repercussions. But yeah, like you said, last week we spent all of our time in King's Landing with that side of the fam. I think I prefer spending time with Team Black. I really like this one. I like this, I think, a lot better than last week's episode.
I've seen people comparing as well, like the Ned Stark's anger in Game of Thrones about Joffrey being a illegitimate heir to the throne, compared to like people being hypocritical when they say, well, if you think Rhaenyra is in the right in this show, then that's the same thing Ned Stark thought, so then I guess you're against the Starks and you're pro-Lannister in the first one. That's not the case, because Rhaenyra is meant to be the queen. And then, like, when it comes time for Jacerys to hop on up there, then maybe you can go, hold on a second, his hair's real brown. But this point, she's absolutely... I mean, if it were me here, I'd be with Joe Grease clothes walking up the steps to try and yell at the family until they leave, because you know, all royals are bastards, which we don't have a shortened version of, because I've picked the wrong series of words to make an acronym out of there.
Okay.
But it's not the same thing. And Rhaenyra, who is meant to be queen, is standing in front of, well, is about to enter a room that Lucerys is looking at the coolest fucking table that's ever been made.
Yes.
It's a sick table. They go around and show, you know, it's this wooden representation of Westeros. and it's all carved out and it looks fucking awesome. And then later on in the episode when they light those candles underneath and you see that it's a fucking RGB gamer table, that's sick.
Yeah, that was awesome. That shit's all over Viserys' giant model. Like, it's just, it's so cool. But yeah, Luke's pacing around being like, I don't know if I'm ready to be a lord. Ah, jeez. I'm showing vulnerability. Oh, no.
Better get my character development out of the way as quick as possible. I got a bad feeling about this week. Yeah, he's stressed about, like, will anyone ever listen to him at Driftmark? It's, you know, can he handle something like that if the sea snake dies? And Rhaenyra tells him, hey, I felt the same way. I was a bit scared initially when my dad told me I needed to be queen.
Yep.
And
then I earned it.
Yeah.
And then I feel like I earned that right.
And
so,
he tells her that he's dissimilar from her and that he's not all perfect.
Yeah.
And I think he's right. He is more of a coward than her.
Yeah, I don't think she's perfect. Although she's pretty good, like, in terms of, you know, moral corruption. I feel like she's stuck to her guns pretty well throughout the whole show.
She's got a lot of the level-headedness and ability to put others before herself that her father had. That sense of duty that leads to a competent ruler. It would take a real inciting incident for her to lose sight of the bigger picture and start going ham on people.
Yeah. But that surely doesn't happen, and I forget what happened in the episode, so I'm going to be surprised by the end.
Lucky we're going back through it.
But is that scene interrupted by Rhaenys arriving?
Yeah, one of the Kingsguard people shows up, and he's like, hey, Big Hair's here. And then Big Hair walks in with the cool shit. Yep. Her hair looks fucking cool, to be clear.
Cool Big Hair, cool armor. She looks badass this whole episode.
I think if she showed up wearing the big leather armor that I've never seen her in before, I'd be like, hey, well, uh-oh. Rather than... Because Rhaenyra and Daemon are both like, go, what's up, aunt?
Yeah.
Or whatever you are to us.
Yeah. How's things? Oh, where's your husband? How's he feeling? Is he on the mend?
He doing okay? I'm assuming dad's fine since you flew up here real quick wearing fucking full armor. She lets them know that Viserys has died, that Aegon has been crowned as king over there. It's all fucking kicked off. And speaking of kicking off, this is when Rhaenyra's unfortunate miscarriage starts to take place. Good time to pan the camera away, I reckon. Let her have some privacy.
Yeah. It's kind of implied that this is caused by the stress of the situation, right?
Sure, I think in part. And I was also reminded when this was happening that, like, oh, that's right, the dad's her uncle.
Yeah.
I mean, they've got two kids together already, but whatever causes this, it certainly is at least brought on a little bit by the news that her dad's dead. And I mean, symbolically, right, this whole thing is a changing of what her life is about, where it can no longer be about family and this, like, prison she viewed herself as being in that she's mentioned before of, like, being stuck as childbearer. That's gone. That's literally dead. And she's shifting over to being a different person and having different responsibilities at this stage.
That's it. Like, I genuinely, my interpretation was like her body is telling her that it is time to prepare for war and you can't be a caregiver right now.
Yeah.
And it's like, if she had a baby, that puts her in a different state of mind and probably less willing to dive into war, which she already is unwilling to, but... Anyway, it's really fucked up and it happens. And I think, like you said, it is an important thematic shift that a lot of people have been traumatized by watching.
It is a graphic, long, disgusting, unnecessary, pointed, story-driven, thematically important. But, like, the theme isn't helped at all by having to build that fucking fake... It's real fucking gross. And gross as in... Not gross as in, like, yuck, imagine. Gross as in, like, you don't need to... It always comes across less as shocking to show me this and more as why did you think that I wouldn't understand what was happening? You don't need to plow this into my fate. Maybe I'm a word that I forgot they use all the time in this show. Maybe I'm craven, but I ain't craving this sort of image. That's for damn sure.
I didn't find it that off-putting. But I also agree it's not necessary. But if I had made it, put it in a show and someone said, why was that necessary? I would have been like, to really drive home the thematic shift. Like, I think you can justify it, but...
There's driving home and then there's driving directly into your living room. Like...
Well, some people need it. Some people don't, they don't get subtlety.
Well, that's definitely true, but... Yeah, it's still a good scene and it's well done, and you're cutting between sort of Damon immediately jumping to preparing for war and throwing out, hey, chuck a raven here, chuck a raven here. Mm-hmm. Lucerys and Jacerys doing some like battle practice. And Lucerys isn't very good at it. That's interesting. Mm. And it seems as though his brother hasn't taught him particularly well how to deal with a conflict situation. Oh, man.
Yeah. Oh, well. Good. At least there'll be time to work on that. It's, you know, they haven't even gone to war yet. So how is he going to potentially get put into a situation where that's an issue? That is weird, though, that they are like, Jacerys, why didn't you train your brother properly?
You're like, obviously, you know, kind of floppy brother.
Yeah.
But
don't you care? He's a bit selfish. He's a bit self-centered, maybe.
He seems like a bit of a hothead. At the very
least.
Yeah,
that's true.
He's having to really grit his teeth and clench his jaw to follow the... So they get brought up to Rhaenyra and she tells them, hey, don't let anyone do anything until I'm there.
Yeah,
nobody
I'm the boss.
Is to make a fucking move.
Yeah. I don't know. I was kind of on Damon's side of like, yeah, get shit sorted. But I think, it's proven out. It's borne out that actually, no, being the level-headed one who tries to get their shit together first, rather rushing into something, especially something like a war, is definitely the right way to go. But that was, I just noted that at the time I was like, yeah, what are you waiting for? Fuck, come on, let's send out the ravens. Let's do all of this shit.
You see, I was on Rhaenyra's side of like, hey, give up.
Hey, it's gonna be really hard, so let's roll
take
over.
The deal. But like the points that she makes later on of like, it literally might be better for everybody if we just don't make this a big fuck around.
Yeah,
like, is this about her and Damon's ambition or the good of the realm? And she asks herself that a whole bunch during this episode. But yeah, so Jacerys is. Sort of similar to Damon having to sort of grit his teeth to do that, but he does make it very clear that like, hey, no one's to do anything until Mum's ready. So in the meantime, Damon goes out to a cliff and does the old dragon intimidation tactic.
Yes.
A classic from back in the future.
Yeah, passed down from Daenerys to Damon.
It's all a flat circle, man.
But these are Kingsguards. Are these... the guys that were meant to be Daemon's guys, or are these other people?
I think these are other people because he's got it in with the City Watch, but
that's right.
The Kingsguard,
that's right, the gold cloaks.
They've
and
just
these
been
are like
sent
the white cloaks.
Yeah, these are the white. Please, white and gold. How could you get them confused? But yeah, these guys are just sent with Rhaenyra. I assume.
Oh, of course,
her
of
because
course.
She's the heir.
Yeah.
So yeah, these guys are the Secret Service, I guess.
Yeah.
And then like
City
Watcher, the FBI or the CIA or whatever.
Yep.
But yeah, Damon does a dragon check of their loyalty, which the best way to find out if someone's really loyal is to not give them a choice but to say that they are.
Yeah. He does say that if you swear an oath and then break it, you'll be tortured to death.
Yeah.
So he really knows how to win the hearts and minds by threatening torture or just murder.
But so while that's happening upstairs, Rhaenyra loses the child and they do a similar sort of ceremony thing that happened with Balon back in the first episode, I suppose, first or second. And in the middle of that, up comes one of the Erics which, like, probably stand at the back until they're done, Eric. Don't fucking, there's no need to give her a fucking second.
And they initially think that he might be threatening them because he hasn't really said anything. He's just walking up to them.
He's interrupted their baby's funeral.
It's pretty rude.
I might think that someone who came and interrupted my baby's funeral was up to no good.
Yeah.
But
they are up to no good. Well, I'm saying that.
He has brought a little gift.
Yeah,
he's brought
that's
the same
true.
Crown that Viserys wore. That Daemon gives a meaningful look at and places again on the head of the monarch of the queen.
That is the only way you get away with interrupting a baby funeral.
Yeah,
by bringing your rightful crown.
Even then, I'd still probably have the thought, like, hey, if you reckon she's queen, she'll be queen in 20 minutes as well.
Yeah.
Fucking
yeah.
Grab a mini quiche and wait.
This mini quiche isn't quite done yet.
Oh, no.
I will say, totally in the spirit of every other guy in the episode, he's very impatient. Everyone's like, look. Come on, let's go. Let's get this shit going. All right? Put on the crown. Let's get ready for war. I'm swearing fealty to you. I'm going to be your creepy protector who never leaves your side. Daemon's like, all right, let's get this shit on the road. Every other guy, everyone except for pretty much like Rhaenys and Rhaenyra is like, let's get to fucking...
It does make because since the first episode, everyone's been going on about like, none of these cunts have been to war. It's all bullshit. They're all summer children. No one's really using that term these days. I guess that's a Northern Winterfell kind of term.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's clear that with a real seeming war about to kick off, a lot of people are getting that thing of like, finally, here we go.
Right.
And they're all trying to act quickly because obviously acting quickly in a situation like this can matter too. But
yes,
everyone kneels. A little subtitle pops up saying regal music playing.
Yes.
And the music is regal. It's nice.
Yeah.
And Rhaenyra's wearing a crown for the first time.
Yep. Looking very queenly.
She looks royal. She looks like a queen, but she looks nervous as hell too.
Yeah.
Because she's getting walked back to the cool table with like, you know, swords getting prepared and this sort of guard detail with her and she looks overwhelmed and on edge here.
She looks concerned, I think, because she senses Daemon's the fire in his belly.
Right.
You know, she knows she's going to have to settle some people down.
Plus she's had a big day already, I suppose, but
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, it's an intense situation that she's walking into. And you're right, Daemon is being very intense about it. He's immediately like, here's where a raven's got to go. We'll send dragons over to this part to look after shit. This guy's going to have to go. They've got these little pieces ready to go on the board of like, who's our friend? Who's not? Who are we going to fuck up? And they ask about... And Rhaenyra has to step in every now and again and be like, hey, shut up. How's Corlys? Is he going to be back? Are you going to swear to me? And Rhaenys has to be like, I don't know. It's his choice. And yeah, it's a little bit of tension between her and Daemon at this point.
Yeah. He's doing his classic thing where, like, a lot of the time when he's rushed into battles... It's been like pure luck that he's got out of them. He's clearly a good fighter, but he certainly seems to lack that the patience required to like plan a war. And he thinks he knows what he's doing, and that's why he's doing it. But there's always room for a bit of a consensus, maybe.
Well, and he does have that like fiery energy has worked for him in the past. Like he does crook shit quickly that works out well for him. I did notice as well at this suggestion of, you know, they're all kind of trying to figure out what they're going to do and how they're going to, and his suggestion is to go and set up a base at Harrenhal to, you know, work out out of in that area. And the fact that, you know, ever since the man that she apparently loved, but we never really got into it, because this show will spend 20 minutes giving you a scene of the most awful thing you can imagine, but we'll skip over the part where there's anybody being in love. You get that bit. Don't show the nice parts. Skip them by 6 years.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so he suggests to go to Harrenhal, this place where, since that happened, there's been a lot of talk of, like, it's fucking cursed.
Yes.
Like, Harrenhal is a bad place to be, especially if you are a strong boy. So, you know, Harrenhal curse getting sort of mentioned as the place to fly the dragons out of with what happens later in the episode, I thought was significant.
Yes. And because Harrenhal is closer to King's Landing, right?
That's the idea. Yeah. They've got a place. If they got the allies they were going to get, I believe they could, basically that would be the front line.
Yeah. So they're talking about the Starks, the Tullys, and the Baratheons. Mm. The Tullys are the Riverlands, obviously the Starks are the North, and all the houses under the Stark banner. And then Baratheon, the Baratheon family are at Storm's End, as we do see later. I never honestly knew anything about the Baratheons, aside from, you know, Game of Thrones, Robert Baratheon is the king, but he's in King's Landing, so we don't see all of their, you know, their house.
I don't think we see Storm's End at all during Game of Thrones, no. I only know of it from looking at that map.
Yeah, right. So those are the ones that have sworn allegiance, but are potentially, you know, they're up in the air because of what's happening.
Yeah, they're confident about the Starks because they're like, that Starks don't break oaths. They'll go with what they said. The Arryns and the Tullys, they're like, we've got blood relations with both of them.
Yes,
so we should be good with them. The Baratheons will have to remind Boris Baratheon, Boris with two O's.
Yes. And two R's, I think.
Yeah, right. Or maybe it's even an E at the end, but it's not Boris, it's Boris.
No.
Or Boros. Yep.
Boros.
We'll have to remind him of his father's oath. So it wasn't actually him who swore, it sounds like.
No. But at this point of the episode, I'm like, cool, Baratheons must be solid then because they did swear an oath.
It's nice to hear talk of the Starks and the Baratheons and shit again, too.
Yes, it is.
That's a bit of fun. And they also say, I guess, just to like level everything up, they'll get no help from the Lannisters. They know that. And I don't know if they maybe mention a couple of other ones that I didn't quite recognize as like, they won't help.
And they mentioned a couple of other ones that had already committed to Rhaenyra as well. So like there were a few smaller ones that they already had. And that the other side already had, you're right. But yeah, it's very much positioned at this point as like these three major houses that we know from Game of Thrones are going to be pretty critical to swaying this war.
Right, because part of the talk they have is about how like, oh, we'll have friends in the City Watch, but I don't know how many. And we're not doing great for men, but we do have a ton of dragons. That's Daemon's main point. It's like we've got 14 dragons, they've got three.
That's right. And that Dragonstone is a pretty good place to be set in, like, as in like it's going to be easy to defend if we come under siege, but that's not what we want to be doing. We want to be attacking.
All that being said, it gets interrupted by a ship approaching with a green Targaryen banner, a green three-headed dragon, and if it isn't old Weasel, Otto Hightower's come along.
They've already got the green dragon changeover. Someone's painted that up quickly.
And look, not to be one of these guys, but boy howdy, it seems like they got there so fast.
Yeah,
because Rhaenys flew up so quick on a dragon that morning.
I think so. Yeah,
maybe some time has passed since the funeral or whatever, but it really looked, it didn't make it look like it had. I suppose it must have if Otto's showing up.
I guess so.
But they're talking initial plans and stuff, and whatever, it's a TV show. You need to skim it along, get it all moving. They've done enough time jumps, but Otto's here quickly.
Yeah.
Comes straight from the place, and he's got the terms from Alicent that she wanted to send up. It's Daemon meeting him, and then they get Rhaenyra to do a cool fly-through.
Yep.
does the Top Gun thing of flying way too close and his coffee spills everywhere.
She loves it. She's done it twice now as a show of strength.
Every time it breaks fucking walls too. Every time the dragon lands, he smashes a bunch of shit. And if I was like the handyman here at fucking Dragonstone, I mean, I guess I wouldn't be out of a job, so great. Whatever, I'll go hammer up the walls.
And you don't get a choice. You're just a peasant. You're a serf.
Nah, I can do what I want. It's free market economy. I'm a Game of Thrones libertarian.
There's got to be a landing pad. You don't have to just like always land on the bridge.
Paint a big D on a flat bit of grass.
That's right. That's right.
Stands for down here. So she does.
I thought you meant paint a big, like a big D and B's.
No. I'd never be so immature.
I guess this could have been. I hate to say it, this could have been an email, but this could have been a message from a crow, but they want this. You got to have the character interaction.
And this is important to them as well. I think sending the hand and like being like, hey, look, we mean it. I'm sending my own father. I know you could kill him. This means a lot to me. We're making ourselves a bit vulnerable. I think it is like a meaningful thing to send him. And his offer from Alicent is basically, hey, cut it out. You ain't the queen. Mm-hmm. We'll give you Dragonstone. Everyone's happy. We'll give your kids this honor and that honor.
Yep.
Your youngest kid gets the honor of being a cupbearer. Can you imagine?
They will legitimize or re-legitimize Rhaenyra as princess or princess of Dragonstone. Driftmark will go to Lucerys.
Mm-hmm.
As has been promised, he will inherit that.
Everyone
when he gets old enough to.
Everyone gets a pardon.
Yes, yes.
So it's a good deal that Daemon immediately calls Otto a cunt over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe he calls the queen a cunt, I can't remember. And then Rhaenyra gets handed a little piece of paper. That is the page she tore out of her book. One beautiful lesbian morning back in the day where she gave it to Alison and she's kept it all these years and it's meant something to her all this time. And it works. It reminds her of like, this is my friend or was my friend.
Mm.
Maybe everything could be peaceful like my father probably would have wanted.
Right.
Even if he knew this misunderstanding had happened, he would probably still go, ugh, but let's keep the peace.
That's right. That's right. He's like, she takes very seriously the part of her oath and the part of her, you know, the way she's presented is, you know, she is the protector of the realm. Even if she's not, you know, currently the crowned protector of the realm, she still takes that as her responsibility and that definitely means not going into war. It's a shame that the actual, like the current king and all of his advisors don't have the same attitude and they seem happy to, you know, tip this over.
Yeah.
They've stolen the crown, so, you know, that's part of it.
Right, exactly. It's us or nothing, but they don't even think or at least Alicent doesn't think she's stolen anything. The rest of them know they have, but they don't give a shit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, they were planning to even if she hadn't got that confusing message.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think Rhaenyra knows that, like, this is not a bad offer. It genuinely could lead to everyone being okay as long as we kind of swallow our pride here. Partly because, and she gets everyone to clear the room, her first sort of, like, queenly thing that she does is, like, this very commanding clear the room, which everyone immediately follows, and Rhaenys gives a little smile at her as she's leaving, like, damn, that was a cool-ass thing to say.
Yeah, yes.
And she does that to tell Daemon, like, hey, look, this could be a good idea to take this, especially because our duty is to the realm as it stands, and also for the bigger thing, which I take seriously, which is A Song of Ice and Fire, seasons 1 through 6.
That's right.
It's weird that she says that.
Maybe her dad reminded of her every season or so. She's like, hey, you know, my dad told me this prophecy in secret. No one else heard about it. But it's you know, I take it seriously.
Well, she doesn't tell him that no one else... She assumes that he would have told Damon as well. She says, you know about it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right.
She goes like, you know That's what it right. is. The Conqueror's... Like, the stuff in the north. And Damon's like, fucking what?
And yeah, then, yeah, that's true, yes.
Grabs her by the throat and intimidates her with a, you know, my brother was dumb about his prophecies. Fuck them. He was an idiot. He was weak. Let's do shit real.
Mm.
And she realizes that he didn't know about this thing and that his brother didn't trust him with this story.
Right. Yeah, I didn't feel... Because I guess this is just a... It's meant to be a secret Targaryen thing, but it's only been passed down to Rhaenyra. Right,
it's only been passed down to the heir.
Yeah, right.
So his brother never saw him as the possible heir even.
Right.
So, it's a purely whoever's sitting in the chair thing is what he'd said about it back in the day. And that was his way of initially showing Rhaenyra, like, hey, I mean it about...
Yeah, right.
...saying that you should be the next one. Meanwhile, Corlys is alive.
Yeah!
He needed a little bit of bed rest.
Yeah, they really made it sound like he was going to die and it was going to cause all of this bloody, you know, furor and we organized that succession for nothing. He's fine.
I suppose he just, like, you know, it was a fever that was getting him before, and it's passed and gone, and good for him. He wakes up full of sarcasm, and has to learn about his brother dying.
Yep, and that he's been a dickhead, and he shouldn't have left Rhaenys by herself when everything was going wrong.
Yep.
And it was a selfish thing to retreat into being a fighting Navy man when he should have been with his wife. And you better fucking make up for it, you son of a bitch.
And so his idea is like, okay, we're Switzerland. Let's swear to no one.
Right.
Just hang out and enjoy our lives and let them all do this and we just be in the middle. But then clearly she convinces him after this. She says, oh, well, actually... Rhaenyra's been pretty cool and doesn't seem as though she wants to go to war and is, like, being pretty leaderly about it.
Yes.
Maybe we chuck behind her.
Yeah, yeah. She, she knows that there's some skullduggery about whatever's happened with Aegon and, like I said at the start of the pod today, like, or earlier, Rhaenyra is the one who seems to have a pretty concrete moral compass and hasn't purposefully fucked anyone over. And Rhaenys, obviously, you know, is aware of that, believes that to be the case, and sees that as the best bet.
Yeah, she's impressed by how Rhaenyra is carrying herself, and so they throw behind what is apparently called Team Black here. Also, their daughters are married to their sons.
Yeah.
Or, you know, engaged to be married or whatever. So it makes sense for them to, if they're going to have to jump in a boat, to jump into this boat. This is also where Rhaenys kind of gives the justification of like, hey, it's not my war to start. And I needed to ask Corlys about it. Maybe she even said that earlier, actually, now that I'm looking at this. But they sort of, they clear the air and set up the table. Everything's all, hey, we're going to, fucking, if we do this, we've got the narrow sea, we can set up. So that, that's something that he tells them about, his big fight where he got his throat cut but lived to tell the tale.
Yes.
They properly took the whatever those islands are.
The Stepstones.
They properly have a garrison down in the in this narrow sea. Mm. They can actually siege King's Landing if they want to.
Yeah. They can blockade it so that any potential allies can get in through there. It's huge. It's like, you know, it's the reason that Britain had an empire, is controlling important passages and shit like that.
Right.
And I think it gives everyone in the room a big old boost of confidence.
It definitely does, because this is where they're like, okay, well, if we can siege King's Landing from the water, we need to surround it with men. If we're going to do that, we do need these people who we think are on our side. So we'll send ravens to them, and then Jacerys pipes up and he's like, dragons are quicker,
Yeah.
And it's the personal touch that matters in situations like this. Sending a baby boy.
Yeah, I know.
Really gives the impression that you mean what you're saying.
I mean, no one brought it up that it was left them totally vulnerable to, like, even on the way back. Like, there are other dragons. Like, sure, they have 13 at Dragonstone, but half of them are baby dragons and, you know, like...
They mention a bunch that are, like, off in the wild and some that are living on a mountain. Yeah. Like, you can't count the hermit dragons on your dragon list.
No. And obviously, you know, wars, especially ones that were, you know, historical wars like this, could go for 20, 50 years, so dragons can grow up. But right now, the other team have the biggest dragon the second biggest dragon that's ever lived.
And Rhaenyra knows this too, because she's saying, like, look, you keep talking about fighting with our dragons, but all those stories about back in the old days, when dragons fought dragons, it meant everything burned.
Yes.
She says she doesn't want to be a ruler of ash and bone. And
yeah.
Tell you what, not the worst thing in the world.
I mean, yeah, I'd rather be a ruler of ash and bone than a bone and an ash.
Telling a bunch of bones what to do?
Oh, that's the life. Right.
Hey, you there, play yourselves like a xylophone.
What are you bloody running the bloody Paris Fashion Week?
Okay. but yeah, and Rhaenyra can tell, is having the same thought that you are of, like, well, this is kind of fucking dangerous. I got to make these boys promise not to fight. Which is part of why I think Jacerys is like, let me do something, because he's like, let me get out there. Let me at him.
Yeah. Yeah, 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 definitely. That's definitely why he suggests it. Yeah. And he's not thinking about his poor, weak brother, as we've been shown earlier. It's not really his concern. It should be, but he's not concerned about it.
And it's weird because he's being sent up to Winterfell, which is further away from the enemy dragons, so you would assume safer.
Yeah.
And the place where the Starks definitely keep their oaths, so you would assume safer. And then Lucerys is being sent to the Eyrie, I think, first, and we just skip over that bit to talk to his fucking aunt or whatever she is, Lady Arryn, and get her, assuming they seem as though that's a done deal and that'll be fine.
Right, right.
Rhaenys is going to go down to King's Landing and just fuck around in the bay.
Yep. And, yeah, that's right.
Lucerys is going to, firstly the Eyrie and then to Storm's End to talk to Boris Baratheon.
Huh. Well, yeah, they totally skipped the Eyrie, but I guess the justification for that is that apparently this Storm's End is like the closest other city that they'd have to go to.
Right. Maybe he was Storm's End, then the Eyrie was the plan or whatever, but...
Right. But at least, yeah, she's like, look, it's just a short flight, you know, he'll be happy to see you. We've been allies for years and years. You've just got to, you know, he's a proud guy. He'll be happy to see a prince.
And she's kind of right about that, because he was happy to see the first prince that got there.
Yeah, yeah. But I think, yeah, it is a bit naive that all of everything that I just said is like, well, that's one way to look at it. But as you say, it's like, well, yeah, that's the closest other city, but also it is still close to all of the other people with bad, like, dragons who might want to burn us alive.
But I think you can see that she knows, because when they're even suggesting this at the table, there's a shot of her and a look that she gives that is, you know, mirrored with a shot of her looking at her kids. And it really looks like she's realizing, like, uh-oh, they just turned into fucking assets and soldiers in a war.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it sucks and I hope they're okay, but this is my duty coming in here. They do have to do this.
Yeah, 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 exactly. There's going to be a million risks taken over the next years, so you got to start at some point.
One of those being to go down into a dragon cave and try to win the voice.
Yeah.
Damon goes down there singing his little heart out.
Yep.
And a big old dragon who lives in the cave spins his chair around and breathes some spectacular fire up into the ceiling and looks Damon dead in the eye. And I don't know who this dragon is for. I was trying to think about this when they were saying that there were all those dragons. It's like, isn't everyone who can ride a dragon, don't they all sort of have one, except for maybe like Baela or Laena? I don't remember which one.
Yeah, I think Baela still doesn't have one, because I think there's like a pointed shot during that discussion. But then I assume, because, and I think Rhaenyra maybe brings it up of like, sure, we might have 17 dragons, but we've only got a few riders. Like, I guess that they can try and train them to be ridden by non-Targaryens, because I feel like we did see that, didn't we? At some point this season, someone had managed to train or managed to like inherit and ride a dragon. I can't remember who.
Well, Aemon obviously got his dragon by just sort of snatching it when it was sitting on a hill. And also, I think Aegon was like kind of earning his dragon when they were in the pit doing the pig thing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, I don't know. Maybe dragons can be poly.
Maybe they can.
I certainly hope so. Every second poly person has a tattoo of a dragon. So
that's, yeah.
It would make sense if it went the other way around, too. Every dragon, dragon has a tattoo of a poly person.
But yeah, I think, you know, it's got to be beyond just the royal family. Like, if they've got all these dragons, then they're going to have to train normal people, or, you know, they're going to have to try and bond them with normal people without Targaryen blood. So that, who knows if that's possible. But yeah, there's this fucking, what did it, I know it said what the dragon's name was.
It starts with a V. Visanthrax or something. Probably not Anthrax, is it? But it's some V like word.
Varaxis, because Vhagar is the one that Aemond has, but yeah, this was a big old cunny. This is like one. Who is this dragon? I guess they just grew up without a rider and got fucking massive.
There's a couple of wild dragons, and they do say there's a couple who. There's one who lives in the basement or whatever called Vinny or whatever this dragon's name is.
Okay.
He lays it out. It's all very quick, but he does say, you know, there's X and Y and V and V and V and V all living in. They kind of list a lot of names of dragons, but there ain't no way I'm keeping track of dragon names.
No.
It's just never going to happen.
But yeah, I guess I also assume, and because we see Luke's dragon, it's tiny, you know. And I was like, oh yeah, they must all be tiny dragons. But yeah, they've got this massive one in the basement, which is great.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
They got a ton of dragons ranging in sizes, but right now Daemon has the big lad. And unfortunately, when Luke arrives at Storm's End there and lands his little Volkswagen Golf dragon, he sees the big gas guzzler, four-wheel drive, stickers on the bumper dragon that Aemond has already there.
Yeah, truck nuts, dragon nuts hanging from the back.
If you don't like my flying, call someone who cares.
Oh, yeah.
Honk if you're scaly. The fact that he goes inside after seeing that dragon doesn't immediately go, oh, well, this is a lost cause. All right, see you later.
Yeah. Not only is this a lost cause, it's a genuine threat to my life.
Yeah. So
stupid.
He wanders into that hole. I guess, you know, being dutiful and delivering the message.
Right.
Maybe being a bit naive and thinking, hey, I'm on a just envoy political mission here. Ain't nothing going to happen to me. Yeah. Which it doesn't in the court. Boris Baratheon is also, you know, when it starts kicking off a bit later, he's like, don't fucking do it in here. Take it outside, lads. But yeah,
that's right.
Aemond is already in this big medieval hall with big medieval king-looking guy.
Yes.
Boris Baratheon, the man who cannot read.
His doctor has to read for him.
It's pretty funny.
Get someone with some book learning in here. I don't know what this. I can't make heads or dragon tails of this.
I'm a hammer man. I liked that little detail, and he reads this note that Luke is carrying, and is like, well, okay, so you're fucking reminding me about my oath. You don't need to remind me of shit. And also, I'm not going to follow that oath. Because
you're
coming here empty-handed, whereas Aemond over here has promised to marry one of my daughters. I'm getting a deal over in this corner. Yeah. And the deal you're offering me is no deal.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. You've offered me a bit of condescension.
Yeah.
And that is not... I don't want to take it. I'm not taking that. Which is a shame. But I guess maybe it does take a specific personality and or family in this world to just be like, yeah, we just literally don't break our oaths, you know, like.
And I think the fact that this is his father's oath and he doesn't even see it as an oath that he's sworn makes sense too. Like,
yeah,
he hasn't specifically said it.
Yeah.
So the world is different now and
it's up for renegotiation, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
Says, if you're going to marry one of my daughters, then sure, maybe. But he stupidly, again, many times, just marry whoever is the most dangerous person's daughter.
That's right.
Get it over with, and you won't be fucking weddinged.
Just be like, I will take that proposition back to the queen, and we'll see what they say. You know, not just like, no, I can't.
But little honor boy here, he refuses, and he says, "Okay, I'll leave, I'll get out of here." But unfortunately, Aemond interrupts in here, and is like, hey, remember how you made me have to have this really cool sapphire eye?
Yeah.
It's time I took your eye, motherfucker.
Yep, yep. Well, I'll allow you to do it yourself.
Yeah, poke it out with my dagger and we'll be fine. If not, I'll come take it. And if you leave, we're going to have a cool dragon chase.
Yeah. And yeah, bizarrely, Luke refuses to poke out his own eye. Aemond tries to go him. Boris is like, fucking A, stop it.
Not in here. Can't you see that? It says no fighting in here, I assume.
Take it outside and then up about 4 miles.
It's a cool looking scene. So yeah, Luke leaves, flies away on his little dragon. Big dragon's already gone.
Oh yeah.
Aemon's run out there through a back entrance somehow.
He's been like, get out, go on, get up there.
Yeah.
I guess he has to come back and get him. But it felt like a Jaws scene or something.
It was
like,
very cool.
Because the cloud it's basically impossible to see through. Super tense.
The one shot of big dragon flying up behind little dragon looked great.
Oh, yes.
And they have a little kind of dogfight here.
Yep.
Snapping and yapping at each other.
Yes.
Until there's a little gully which little dragon can fit in. Very smart. But then unfortunately the dragons are like freaked out by this chase. Mm-hmm. They're getting angry at each other here because Arax, which is Luke's dragon.
Ah, yes, yeah.
Just chucks a little fire on the cheek of Big Lad.
Yeah.
Stupid
naughty
move.
Naughty boy.
That shit'll get you bitten in half, dude. And yeah, Aemond is loving this as well. He is laughing his ass off. Getting a ton of rainwater in his mouth while he's doing it too. The fact that he's just able to laugh and not go like is unbelievable. But
it's one of the keys to being a dragon rider. You have to learn how to deal with that.
I guess you'd hold your tongue across your teeth to block it out.
That's right, yeah. Store it in your cheek and drink it later.
Unfortunately, they fly up above the clouds. It's all very beautiful, but Big Lad's had enough of Little Lad's shit.
Yeah.
Chomps him in half along with Luke. And Aemond has this look on his face of like, oh no, how could that have happened? Like, can't you engaged in a dragon fight?
Yeah, I mean, I think like just before that, and I think it is, it's escalated by the fire, but Aemond is saying like, no, Vhagar, no,
right.
No.
Yeah, they're both trying to yell commands at the other dragon and saying obey me or whatever.
Yeah, stop, don't start a war. Unfortunately, Vhagar does not listen. He's crazy, he's covered in fire, he's angry. Aemond is not able to control him, and he just bites Arax in half, bites Luke off. Luke's dead. Dragon's dead. And, Aemond has the look on his face of, I think I may have just started a war.
Yeah. I just fucking shot Franz Ferdinand, dude.
Yeah.
I'm
by
fucked
accident
here.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. He was saying to take him out.
I know.
The news makes its way back to Rhaenyra for the final scene. And we get a really, really cool extended shot. Daemon tells her and she, you know, looks in grief.
Yep.
Is like keeling over in front of the fire, and last shot stands back up with like a broken, determined face of yes. someone who's about to start three seasons of battling.
That's right. That's right. She mad and sad.
Mad
That's
and
what
sad.
I got from it.
it's two incredibly descriptive words that happen to rhyme, and they perfectly sum her up. It's great. I love. Yeah. I knew she was going to turn around, you know, and give us that, give us the look of like, here we fucking go, and she nailed yes. it. It was a great. They're all very good actors in this show.
I agree. I've seen some people disliking her specifically, Emma Darcy. I think because people really liked Millie Alcock as the younger version.
Right, but who was also great.
Yeah, yes, yep. I think that Emma Darcy's great. I think that everyone who is acting in this show is very, very good at what they're doing. And yeah, like all the characters that we've lost because they died, I think all of those actors did great jobs as well.
Yeah.
It's the main reason that I'm so invested, because we've had to reinvest in new actors playing the same characters, but they're playing them so well that it just works for me. So
totally.
Yeah.
There were a couple of different times where the show could have easily lost us with like the beginning, which it's strange to think about it now after a really great season. And I'm super excited to see this war take place for however long it happens in the rest of the show. I assume the rest of the show is this war.
Yeah.
But the fact that my feeling before this show started was like, oh, we could have a clunker coming or whatever.
Yeah.
And then the change of actor and all of that, you're right. Having to get us again with that after
right.
these initial actors had been the reason that the show became appealing, because they made those characters appealing. But the way around they did it as well, I think a lot of people know this by now, is they cast the adult actors first and then found the children to go along with them.
Yeah.
I would imagine that the reception to those kids as well means that if they weren't going to already, we might get a flashback or two in the coming seasons featuring
sure,
them.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
Yes. That would be great. Yeah.
But I'm really, I'm into all these appealing shitheads they've been able to create a second time. And I am excited to watch more in a year.
Yeah, fucking hell. And yes, we think there's going to be four seasons total.
They've said four.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, fuck, what if it's really, really successful and they decide to drag it out?
I mean, that would be a shame to do it, have the opposite problem of the first one, right? I would imagine that they've got a plan and that they're going to stick to it, would be my guess. If you were going in as a showrunner after the reception to the end of Game of Thrones and the reasons that happened, you'd have to be pretty forward thinking.
Yes. I think I'm probably just thinking of like Lost, where it was so successful that they padded it out. But
right.
This is HBO. This is not ABC. They don't need ad money. They've got subscribers, and they will be committed to a creative vision rather than pandering to the money men. I hope. I assume
that they haven't done it yet. If a show made sense to end, they've let it. I think
that
I'm right in saying. Other than Curb Your Enthusiasm, which has been going for 150 years.
Yeah. But it's up to Larry.
That's Larry's choice.
It's up to Larry.
I ain't Larry.
Speaking of letting things end, that's the end of season one. And that's the end of season one of our podcast about House of the Dragon. I'm sure we'll jump back, like we did this time, with like a episode before the season kicks off, so we can, you know, have a look at any casting rumors and trailers and shit like that. But and obviously, yeah, we'd love to keep getting your emails. It's very nice to read them. We probably won't be back for just about a year.
What was that email address?
That email address was aryatalkingtomepod@gmail.com. If you like the podcast, you can go back and listen to the Game of Thrones episodes, and I know that people are doing that. People will probably get around to watching House of the Dragon, and if you have friends who do that, recommend this podcast to them, because people seem to like doing that, listening to the pod afterwards. So, yeah.
Yeah, Ben's right. Send him those. I'm going to get the login details off of Ben after this so I can read the emails too and have a little look. So send him more now and tell us what you thought of the season. Because overall, like, I guess final thoughts of the thing. I already kind of said it, but it was great.
Yep.
Surprising and different in ways that I really appreciated. But then more and more as it went on, I was like, it's cool being back in the Game of Thrones shit. It's cool hearing people say Stark.
I know. I agree. And I like that we had like a good 7 or 8 episodes of really focusing on what is happening here and now and not, you know, I'm sure people were aware of references that maybe we didn't pick up on to Game of Thrones-y stuff, but we really sunk into like this family and their internal politics and their, you know, hopes and dreams and issues with each other. And then only now, as it makes sense, we gear up for another world war. Do those familiar names start coming back in?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was really well paced, given they had to navigate a lot of time jumps. The story is super gripping and engaging. And yeah, I'm pumped. Like, I know some people have watched it and enjoyed it, but have been like, but when's shit going to kick off? You know, give me some more spice.
Right.
And like, I don't think either of us have felt that way. We've enjoyed it. But also, we're going to get some spice next season. We're going to get a fucking war.
Right. And if you're thinking of the thing as 4 seasons, then it makes sense for any story for the first 25% to be, you know, act 1.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
setting up who they are and what they want and why we should care.
Give us a couple flashbacks in the future where it show me Rhaenyra and Harwin meaning a fucking thing to each other.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think that could be cool as well, as like plastering that stuff in during the rest of the seasons might be nice, but I don't know. I once again trust the people who are making Game of Thrones shows, which is cool and very nice, and I look forward to the rest of this show, and it's exciting about the idea that maybe they'll do more like this. Anyway.
Yeah, yeah. But yes, ariatalkingtomepod@gmail.com. Also, Aria Talking To Me on Instagram. We post all the episodes up with, like, you know, little episode images. So if you want to share stuff around, it does help us a lot. Leaving reviews on Apple Podcasts and ratings on Spotify. I noticed a bunch of people have done that, which is really, really sick. But hey, even more would not hurt. Yeah. So it does genuinely help get the show in front of other people. We do appreciate the people who've done it already. But yeah, that is episode 10 of season 1 of House of the Dragon, done and dusted in the books. And we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.